Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
The power nightmare in Texas, the executive point of view. Amazon now trying to get union backers to quit their jobs. And today on the show, our independent labor voice, Thomas Buffenbarger, and the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. Good afternoon and welcome to the Tuesday, February 23rd edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, most recently Pandora. And remember this, when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and eventually give us a rating. We'd appreciate a five-star rating. We have two guests on the show today. Thomas Buffenbarger, our independent labor voice, former general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, is going to be our first guest. And one of the things we're going to talk about is the meeting that Joe Biden, President Biden, had at the White House last Wednesday, where he called various union leaders to the Oval Office to talk about rebuilding our infrastructure. So darn important. And Biden pretty much came right out and said, we want to go union. And that's why he brought all those union officials into his office. They were presidents of union, including Rich Trumka and the current head of the Machinist Union, Robert Martinez. So I texted Tom yesterday. I said, Tom, let's talk about this, because when you were general president, I'm sure you had similar meetings with presidents. And he said, yes, I did. And we got results. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about Nikki Haley. Nikki Haley is the former governor of South Carolina. And she's the woman that said, if you have a union shop, we don't want you here. South Carolina has the lowest union density in the country because of people like Nikki Haley. And she's thinking about running for president in 2024. United Airlines, I'm sure you've seen this story or heard about it. They said that they are grounding all of its Boeing 777 aircraft that have the same type of engine as the plane that was forced to make an emergency landing just after leaving the Denver airport on Saturday. And my God, what a scary situation that was. The engine, a Pratt & Whitney engine, caught on fire, burst into flames just minutes after it took off from the Denver International Airport. It was going to Hawaii. Thankfully, they were able to circle back and land in Denver. Imagine if that plane was over water. Turns out none of the aircraft's 229 passengers or the 10 crew members on board were injured, and the plane landed safely in Denver. The debris was scattered all over the suburbs, including a soccer field. And now the National Transportation Safety Board is investigating. Question is, what's going on with Boeing? I'm sure Tom is going to zero in on that as well. Just a couple of things we're going to mix up with Tom Buffenbarger. Max Richmond, on behalf of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, will be our second guest. He's been on the show before, and we're going to talk about what the organization does. And you have heard over the years that Social Security is running out of money. I think it's, 2023 or 2024. And then there's Medicare. And there's a number of fixes that Congress needs to act upon. We'll talk about that. We'll also get into pharmaceutical prices. They continued to go up. In fact, prices for the most commonly prescribed drugs for seniors have increased 10 times the rate of inflation, 10 times since 2013. And Medicare beneficiaries pay thousands of dollars a year in out-of-pocket drug costs that they can't afford. And as a result, this is what's happening. Some seniors have been cutting their pills in half or just skipping them altogether because they can't afford the drugs. They can't afford the drugs. And this is the crazy thing. Big Pharma raised the prices in the middle of a pandemic. I just don't get it. They got to rein in these people. And the pharmaceuticals, we have reported on this various times over the years. They are the largest lobbying group in Washington. That's how powerful they are. And as a result, the money that they just lay out to these politicians, I mean, all the fundraisers they contribute to, that's why things are the way they are. So I'm sure we'll get into all of that with Max Richman as our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Well, the power outages, which resulted from Texas's independent power grid collapse a week and a half ago, continued throughout the state over the weekend. Although the temperatures moved up, it's starting to get back to normal, but they got a long way to go. Over the weekend, President Biden declared a major disaster. It's a move that will allow him to provide additional federal resources to the state. Now, in the aftermath of the crisis, which left millions without power and water, some households are now reporting electricity bills, which are designed to fluctuate with demand, as high as $17,000. I'm not kidding you. Prices increase from $50 to $9,000 per megawatt in some areas. Now, to you, to me, this is what you call price gouging, but not to Texas energy executives. They are using somewhat different language. Take, for instance, Roland Burns, chief financial officer of Comstock Resources Incorporated. He told shareholders last week, this was just like hitting the jackpot. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You got people shivering without heat. Power goes back on. And it costs you $17,000. 70 people died so far, by the way. William Hogan, an economist who helped design Texas's unique electricity market, which is the only state which is with a standalone grid in the country, said the energy system has functioned as designed. Higher demand leads to higher prices, which in turn forces customers to reduce their energy use or pay a premium. It's not nice, he said, but it's necessary. Can you believe this? In the meantime, the governor of Texas is telling people not to pay these crazy prices. I don't know what they're going to work out, but this is absolutely ridiculous. Executives are jumping up and down. Well, that's what's supposed to happen. Keep in mind, too, there are contracts that you can sign that lock in prices so this does not happen. If you are on a fluctuating rate, a variable rate, as they call it, you can get hit. Maybe not like what's happening in Texas, but nonetheless, take a look at your electric bill and your heating bill and try to lock in those prices. There's some good deals out there. Union organizers say Amazon is offering workers a bonus to quit their jobs ahead of the deadline for a union vote at the company's Bessemer Fulfillment Center. Check this out. Officials for the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union say Amazon workers in Bessemer received notification over the weekend that they were eligible for bonuses of $1,000 or more if they quit their jobs. Balloting began this month for a mail-in vote among the more than 5,000 Amazon workers at the fulfillment center. The votes will be counted in late March, and if approved, the workers would be represented by the union. The president of that union, Stuart Applebaum, said the bonus application deadline ends only a few days before the union vote is scheduled to be counted. And this is what he said. It demonstrates how terrified Amazon is of its workers getting a voice in the workplace. I think what's really significant about this offer is that they're seeking to remove the workers who don't want to accept what's going on at Amazon and want something different. These are the people who would most likely vote for the union, and they wouldn't be counted if they quit. So here Here's the deal. The union has made several allegations that Amazon is attempting to stifle support for organizing among employees. A coercion complaint was filed this past month against the company over a website that Amazon created in connection with the union vote. Also, organizers with the retail workers have accused the company of working with Jefferson County to change traffic lights near the fulfillment center. Why? To prevent members from talking to employees. It also said Amazon has been forcing employees into mandatory training sessions where employees hear about union dues and how unions will jeopardize their job status. Now, it's my understanding that was supposed to stop once the vote started. So there's not much clarity on that. But my guess is if Amazon calls them a training session, you'll have to go because it's a training session. But it seems like they're sneaking in these union avoidance schemes. Now, according to Amazon, the bonus program known as The Offer has been part of the company since 2014. It's open only to some regular hourly employees who have completed one continuous year and have been through at least one peak season, which would be the holiday shopping season. Employees with more experience are offered higher bonuses. It's not open to reserves, interns, corporate, or subsidiary employees, and associates are not eligible for rehire if they accept the offer. So if you take that bonus, you can't come back. I don't think they'd want to anyway. But anyway, the company said the offer is being made available from now through March 16th to all eligible North American employees. At the program's creation, Amazon said an employee staying in a job they don't like isn't healthy for the employee or the company. So get the heck out of here. This is crazy. Oh, I can't wait to see how that vote's going to turn out. All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Before we get to Tom Buffenbarger, just want to do a shout out to the local 1296 members of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. We're talking 1,100 IAM members who make large commercial heating and air units at Trane Technologies. And they just overwhelmingly voted to ratify a four-year collective bargaining agreement at their Clarksville, Tennessee plant. The contract secured increases in wages, paid sick leave, raising short-term disability pay by 10%, and maintaining the current employee monthly medical premium contribution levels and formulas for the duration of the agreement, along with a greater shoe allowance and improvements in various contract language. Got a comment here from Jerry Benson. He's the business rep at Local Lodge 1296. That's District 1888. He said the gains in this contract could not have been achieved without the solidarity exhibited from the members of the local. So hats off to Local 1296. Let's go to our live line right now. Standing by is the former general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, and that would be Tom Buffenbarger, our new independent labor voice. Well, not new. He's been doing this for quite some time, and he just loves the show. He wants to continue in that role as an independent labor voice. Tommy, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
Doing great, Flash. Glad to be back with you, and that was good news about Lodge 1296.
Yeah, Trane Technologies, I have one of their furnaces, Trane. Actually, they also manufacture American Standard. It's the same plant. I don't know if they make the furnaces at that plant. I think this is a commercial heating unit plant. So good stuff there. I'll tell you, quality products, American-made products. We got to do more of that, no doubt. I want to talk about the meeting at the White House with in fact, the current head of the Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Robert Martinez. But first, the big story is the jet engine catching on fire. And we're talking about the United flight out of Denver on Sunday. And I'm just thinking, well, those poor people, I mean, they're in the air watching an engine catch fire. I have to ask you this. How long can a plane fly like that? I mean, I have heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you can fly if an engine's down. What do we know about that, Tom?
Well, if they're in the air and they're flying and lose an engine, they can continue to fly, but they'll look for the first appropriate place to safely land the aircraft.
Yeah.
In this case, the plane had just taken off from Denver, going, as I understand it, to Honolulu. That's a long flight. And the engine just didn't catch fire. It actually came apart because of a turbine fan failure. And what was surprising on this, the shrouding of a jet engine should capture most of that and keep it, you know, from flying all over the place and hitting the ground like it did in the Denver suburbs. So something really big happened inside that engine. And, you know, to have been a passenger on the plane, especially on that side of the aircraft where you could kind of, if you were looking out the window, watch it all happen, it's a pretty scary event.
Yeah, imagine if they were over water. Oh, my gosh. Well, thankfully, nobody heard on that. But I know now you worked at a GE engine plant in years past, right?
Yeah, I served my apprenticeship and worked at General Electric Aviation. That's the headquarters of GE Aviation, one of their most profitable divisions, for a little plug there for my local. And that's in just north of Cincinnati in Evendale, Ohio. It's represented by members of Local Lodge 912. In my opinion, Flash, the greatest IAM local in the country, and my local. And it's also represented by members of the UAW who do some production work there. And
okay.
So they do great work. And we've seen our share of engine issues before in the past as well. And metal fatigue, if this is what they ultimately determine it is, that can happen, and they'll be scrutinizing the maintenance records, and they'll be scrutinizing replacement parts that were put in that engine. And this is high-tech, very high-tech stuff that they do to make these engine blades, and every once in a while, it's usually a void in the metal somewhere that stresses out and gives way, and we see the results of that.
So let me ask you, was this, you think, not properly inspected? I guess the investigation's going to take a long time, probably a year. But in your opinion, metal fatigue, is that just wear tear? Is this something that maybe was overlooked? What do you think?
That's hard to tell. But metal fatigue, Flash, it's still a science, and it's still evolving. That's not the fault of the people who make the parts or the people who repair the engines. That's something inherent in a material itself. And sometimes one will wear out quicker than it should, or it didn't get replaced as they rotate parts in and out on maintenance. I'm kind of thinking it's a metal problem, and that's what let go. And once those things are spinning at tremendous RPM, and they're big, when one lets go, then it takes out all the rest. And that's what we saw happen in that engine. And then in effect, it just comes apart, or it will, and I don't want to use this term lackadaisically, but it'll explode in the air. In this case, I'm talking about just coming apart. And it took some big pieces of the engine housing with it. And that's what fell on the Denver suburbs. Normally, that's supposed to stay on the engine so it contains some of the shrapnel, if you will.
Yeah.
And this time, the forces were so great, it didn't do it.
Well, they're lucky nobody on the ground got hurt when they came down.
Listen, everything I said, it was raining metal. And thank God people took cover and there were no fatalities from that. Because if you get hit, some of these pieces were huge. You get hit by a piece of flying metal that's accelerated from an engine failure. It's like getting struck by a bullet or something coming out just straight down out of the sky.
I'm just thinking about the big picture with Boeing. They have not had a couple of good years here, you know, with the 737 MAX, and the CEO was forced out because of that. I'm just wondering, you've been head of the machinists and aerospace workers for a long time. You've worked on engines. You have seen a decline in quality. And it's not because of the workers. The workers have been very vocal about this over the years. But I'm just concerned about going forward here and lack of regulation. We've seen a big tug of war going on between conservatives and liberals on what needs to be done to make sure that whatever we produce and we put passengers on these planes, that they're going to be safe and secure. I'm wondering, what lies ahead? You follow me?
Well, Flash, I can say this. This 777 aircraft has been in service for quite a while, as all 777s have been. It's a proven airplane. But it was built in a different era when the leadership at Boeing was, when Boeing ran Boeing, when Boeing leadership came from the ranks, came from the people at Boeing. And this is an unfortunate failure of a piece of the airplane. This isn't Boeing's fault when the engine came apart. This is, you know, who knows who the fault belongs to. But the engine comes from a different company. When you buy an airplane, Flash, you pick one of three different manufacturers of engines to put the power plants on those airplanes. So, per se, this isn't a Boeing problem, but it puts them back in the spotlight in a tough position because they're still dealing with the fiasco of the 737 MAX, and we'll be dealing with that for a long time to come. It shook the faith people and passengers have in how an airplane gets put together, and not on the craftsmanship involved, but on the design, the engineering, and how honest and transparent the whole process is. What we're learning about 737 MAX's issues is all the stuff. It was a plot between federal government inspectors and Boeing management people that hid issues that the workers and the pilots and everybody knew was going on. And this is why it begs for a very thorough federal investigation. I think you're seeing some of that unfold now. And who knows what happens with this as this case develops through the courts from the people who have sued Boeing over these accidents that occurred. There'll be much more to come out, and I'm hoping it's the net result. They go back to properly enforcing the safety standards and the procedures whereby we build airplanes, and that a little re-regulation in the process will be a good thing. Yeah. I'm not a believer in deregulation of stuff like airplanes or modes of transportation, because it usually leads to deregulation so much people get killed.
Yeah, look, there's a reason
Texas
for those regulations.
The energy situation. Texas is not part of the national power grid. They deregulated it in Texas. They wanted to go it alone, and they trusted private industry to look out for the interests of the customers. Well, that's not working out too well today.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. At least 70 people died in Texas as a result of that. All right, Tom, I got to take a quick break. Tom Buffenberger, our independent labor voice, former general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. Later in the show, Max Richmond on behalf of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. Back in a few.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our Raising Wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
For our troops and their families, the military is more than a career. It's a journey, and every step along the way, the USO is there.
It's an experience that soldier will never forget. That's what the USO does.
Be a part of their journey. Donate today at USO.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, you can check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, most recently Pandora. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Tom Buffenberger, our independent labor voice, former general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. We're talking off the air here about Nikki Haley. Now, Nikki Haley lured, when she was governor of South Carolina, she lured Boeing to her state and promised them no unions, no unions. In fact, she said on many occasions that if you had a union shop, we don't want you in the state of South Carolina. So let's follow her path here, Tom. She becomes Trump's UN ambassador. Then she gets on Boeing's board, and the 737 MAX, that disaster happened while she was on the board. Is that right?
Yeah. So she's governor of South Carolina. And Boeing, she lured Boeing, all right. They built a huge plant there and started to build, as a second site, the 787 aircraft. And the ones built in South Carolina had tremendous problems with them, with fit and finish and, you know, quality issues.
Yeah.
Well, Trump gets elected president. He reaches out to her and appoints her as the U.N. ambassador representing the U.S. And she serves there until Trump, in his administration, proceeded to piss off the U.N., our NATO allies, European allies, Asian allies, everybody around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the heat developed at the U.N. on her. So she leaves. She quits. And lo and behold, Boeing offers her a position on their board. So she takes it. I'm sure that came with a lot of great amenities. And then the 737 MAX crisis hits. And Nikki stayed on the board until the heat really grew and people were becoming aware just how bad this situation was. And so once again, Nikki did what Nikki does. When the heat's on, she quits and leaves. And now I see in the media that many are talking about her being a potential Republican presidential candidate in 2024. Well, I've got a big question about her candidacy and her fitness for it. If she's president and something happens and there's a lot of heat, what does she do? Quit?
Yeah.
These are serious issues and questions people and voters got to ask themselves. And if you want a fighter and somebody who will believe in whatever it is their job is for the day or the moment, it should be a commitment to see a company or a state or the nation through difficult times. And Nikki only knows how to do one thing, quit.
Now, Tom, I'm thinking about the White House meeting last week where Biden summoned a number of union leaders, starting off with Rich Trumka, the AFL-CIO, and the current head of the Machinists Union, Bob Martinez, to talk about infrastructure. Now, Nikki Haley, if she ever became president, I hope that day doesn't happen, that kind of meeting would not happen because she just does not like unions. But that being said, I mean, you were general president for a long time, and I know you had a number of meetings with various presidents throughout the years. I was wondering if you could speak to our listeners about that and how those meetings went and the results as a because of those meetings.
Well, Flash, I was glad to see President Biden holding those meetings and doing so early in his administration, and to talk about a subject every union has a stake in, as well as the American public, and that's the infrastructure of this country. In the past, I've been in those type meetings with going back as a representative working with Bill Wimpersinger when Jimmy Carter was president, and he would periodically have labor leaders in. Bill Clinton, Barack Obama. Now, I've had the occasion to meet with all of them. Most often, though, it was with Bill Clinton and Al Gore. And those meetings, you could tell the president and the vice president were relaxed. They were comfortable around the representatives of working people. And the conversations were very open and freewheeling. And when you got down to the brass tacks for why you were there, they were productive. And I'm hoping, and I believe this is the case with President Biden, that the current leadership of the unions today are going to find the same thing. During Bill Clinton's years, by the time you left a meeting at the White House, the president, who kept his own, handed it to an aide, says, follow up on these. And you know what? They did. And there were examples of, for the machinist union's interest, issues with shipyards in Maine and in Louisiana and New Orleans, where we had difficulties dealing with the Navy Department. And it's funny how the tune and tenor of the Navy officials we dealt with changed after those meetings at the White House, and they started to give a little respect and acknowledgement to the unions and to the workers who built the finest Navy ships in the world.
That's great.
Those meetings mean something. And when you have presidents like Joe Biden, Clinton, Carter, Obama, for sure, you saw results come pretty quick. So they're worthwhile, they're effective, and I know when they show these pictures on the news, the corporate board members throughout the country just cringe because they wish they could have meetings just like that.
Right. Well, they had their way for several years with the Trump administration.
It's time
for workers to have a voice, and they're certainly having that voice going on. I'm feeling really good. We need to, as Biden said, we got to build back better. And now with labor involved, we got to build back better with unions. And unions need to be at the table. They are at the table. And I think we're going to see some results here right away. It feels really good. I would imagine, too, over the years, you've had several meetings with Biden when he was maybe vice president or when he was a senator.
Many times. And there's always a lot of funny stories that come out of the meetings with them. The serious business, of course, got done. But Joe Biden liked to visit and talk and learn about the people he was meeting with. So he would ask about your family, where you came from, what you did, what's your background. And if you went to a follow-up meeting, he would remember everything you told him. So it was always impressive. And Bill Clinton was like that, too. You only had to mention something once, and the president would remember and associated with you with that incident or event or whatever the issue was, and ask, how did it turn out? Were you satisfied? Is there anything else we can do? Do you know how that makes a person feel when the most powerful person in the world asks that question? So I'm hoping that there's great success for certainly the labor movement, my brothers and sisters, and all the unions, but for this president, aligning himself with the people who make America hum every day.
There you go. Well, I'm going to leave it on that note. Tommy, always a pleasure having your point of view. Our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger, former general president of the Machinists and Aerospace Workers, retired 5 years now. Is that right?
5 years.
God bless you. You take care. Be safe. We'll talk to you next month.
Okay. The best to you and your listeners, Flash.
Quick break. When we come back, the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
I want to tell you a secret everyone should know. Are you listening?
When it comes to your body,
the greatest gift you can give yourself
is knowing your HIV status.
Knowing your status allows you to live your life
and stay healthy.
So follow my lead.
I'm doing it.
I'm doing it.
I'm doing it.
And make HIV testing a part of your routine.
It's fast, free, and confidential.
Get tested today. You'll be glad you did.
Visit cdc.gov/doing it.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, we're available on various platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and most recently, Pandora. You can also check us out on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. Welcome back to the show. It's been a while. Max Richman is his name, and he is president and CEO of a great organization founded in 1983. They're called the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. Website is ncpssm.org. And Matt has been president and CEO for the last 10 years. Max, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting me again. I really appreciate it.
All right. Maybe you can get us a little more background information on your committee. And from what I understand, it was formed in the days of the Reagan administration when a lot of people were talking about the end of Social Security, right?
That's absolutely right. It was founded in 1983 by a former congressman by the name of Jim Roosevelt, who happened to be the oldest son of President Roosevelt. And he felt that it was incumbent upon him at that time, when there was so much discussion about the demise of Social Security, to preserve what he felt was his father's greatest legacy, that being Social Security.
So the mission here is to preserve Social Security and Medicare. In your opinion, Max, where are we now? I'm hearing figures that Social Security is going to start cutting benefits in, 2033, 34, and Medicare might be running out of money before that. What's your opinion?
Well, I don't foresee that happening. But under the current circumstances, if there are no changes whatsoever to the Social Security program in terms of either benefits or revenue, the program will not have sufficient resources to fund 100% of benefits in 2034. It might be a year earlier. We'll find out from the trustees this spring. They issue a annual report. Because of the pandemic and high unemployment, we've had obviously less money going into the program through the payroll tax, and people retiring early because they just need the money. So the more and more are retiring at 62. So the program won't be bankrupt, but it will be short of being able to fund full benefits by about 21-22% if there are no changes. I do not foresee that happening. That would be disastrous if it did happen. I think the Congress will step up this year, hopefully, and make the changes that are necessary. If you'd like to talk about that, we can.
Definitely.
To improve the program and to extend the solvency way beyond 2034.
What, in your opinion, is the best way to do that? And I bring that up. We do a regular feature here with the Alliance for Retired Americans, and they talk about scrapping the cap, where you stop contributing into Social Security. Is that one of the plans on the table right now?
Absolutely. And I know we work with the Alliance for Retired Americans very closely here in Washington. We're on the same page on that proposal to they talk about scrapping the cap, and a lot of people don't know that workers stop paying Social Security tax, FICA tax, at the wages of $142,000 a year. Excuse me, that goes up a little bit every year, but after that, no more payroll tax. Why? The proposal, I think, that has a lot of momentum. It did get a lot of support in the last Congress in the House, didn't go very far in the Senate, would keep the cap at what it is. And as I said, it changes a little bit every year, but then begin again collecting payroll taxes on those workers earning above $400,000 annually in wages. And by the way, that is consistent with President Biden's commitment not to raise taxes on anybody earning less than $400,000 a year. A change like that would bring in enough revenue to extend the program for many, many years and hopefully improve the benefits in some important ways. Having a fair, accurate, and more generous cost of living adjustment. Anybody who's familiar with Social Security knows what a COLA is, and the COLA is often too small. In I think, three of the last 10 years, it's been zero because the calculation for setting up the COLA is flawed. Also, bring in enough revenue to improve the minimum benefit and make some other improvements for those oldest beneficiaries who have been on the program for 20 years or so.
So we can get more money for recipients of Social Security and keep the program healthy. That's essentially what you're saying here. Now, the question, Max, do they have the political will? Do they, meaning Congress? Because we have heard about this for many, many years, and nothing seems to be happening. Well, at least the last time was back in the early 80s when Reagan was president, and there was a threat going on that it was going to run out of money. Are we at that juncture right now?
Well, we're not quite at that juncture yet. Back then, the period you were talking about in the early 80s, we weren't looking at 15 or 16 years of solvency before there was a problem, a shortfall. We were looking at about 6 months. We don't want to get to that point because then the measures that would have to be taken, I think, would be too dramatic, too drastic. We've got time now. And as for political will, you know, we've got a majority in the House and a majority in the Senate, albeit a small majority, that I think supports expanding the program and improving the solvency in the way that I discussed. And we've got someone in the White House who I think has a strong commitment, a strong record on preserving Social Security. So, you know, I think the stars may be aligned just right at this moment to make the changes to protect the program for many, many years to come.
All right, let's talk about prescription drug prices. I know this is a big issue for your group, and I want to zero in on Medicare. Now, Medicare is paying way too much money for drugs, and I guess that's by design. And when you contrast that with, like, the Veterans Administration, they can get a lower price. Why is that? What's the problem here?
Well, first of all, the cost of prescription drugs isn't just a big issue for our organization. It's a big issue for consumers. We hear about this at virtually every town meeting that I've had over the years. The cost of prescription drugs is way too high, forcing Medicare beneficiaries and others to make choices between staying healthy and eating, staying healthy and paying the rent, staying healthy and paying the utilities. So the nub of the problem with high cost of prescription drugs under the Medicare program is a prohibition by law that the Medicare program, the government, cannot negotiate with the pharmaceutical companies for the best price. And as you correctly pointed out, there's a difference between the way Medicare approaches the cost of prescription drugs and the Veterans Administration. The Veterans Administration has that authority. They do negotiate with the pharmaceutical companies and get prices more than half as expensive as it is for the Medicare program. I was around when the Congress and the White House passed and signed into law the Medicare Prescription Drug Program, Part D of Medicare. That was in 2002 and 2003 when that happened. Unfortunately, that law includes, if you can believe this, a specific prohibition that says the government cannot negotiate to get the best price for prescription drugs for Medicare beneficiaries. You can tell, I think, who was in the room when that deal was struck. It wasn't the National Committee to Preserve Social Security Medicare, I'll tell you that. It was the pharmaceutical companies. It was a sweetheart deal that has reaped huge benefits, financial benefits for the pharmaceutical industry, and has resulted, I think, in price gouging on prescription drugs for the Medicare program. So we have been working on this issue ever since, overturning this prohibition, and have met with resistance in the House and in the Senate. And again, I think we have the right composition now in the House and the Senate to make this change. The House passed legislation, H.R. 3, the Elijah Cummings prescription drug legislation, in the last year, that would have done just what I've talked about, remove that prohibition. Of course, it died over in the Senate, didn't even have a vote. That, I think, is going to be different this year.
Boy, I hope so, because I'm reading on your website, prices for the most commonly prescribed drugs for seniors have increased 10 times the rate of inflation. 10 times.
Yes,
the rate of inflation. Yeah, since 2013. So something's got to be done, and done right away. And this is ridiculous here, because you're hearing stories about seniors cutting their medication in half because they can't afford it. They can't afford it. How's that going to affect their lives? Not good. Not good.
Absolutely not good. And one of the most galling arguments that I hear repeatedly from the pharmaceutical industry is, well, we've got to raise these prices to have the funding necessary to create these groundbreaking and necessary drugs. That's hogwash. The pharmaceutical industry has reaped all of these benefits, financial benefits, and a lot of the cost of doing the research for these prescription drugs comes from the federal government. So the federal government is paying a lot of the cost of the research, and yet they're stuck with these exorbitant prices from the pharmaceutical industry. It's just not right.
No, no. Max, let me ask you a question. You know, people are getting their vaccine now, either the Pfizer or the Moderna, and I know more are in the pipeline. Yeah. Now, the government's picking up the cost of those vaccines, but what about down the road? Is that going to change, to your knowledge?
To my knowledge, the government has worked out the arrangements with the drug companies to pay for these vaccines. I don't foresee that changing at all.
Okay, good. That's good to hear. So moving forward here, is there anything that's, you mentioned some legislation. I'm just wondering, any timetable? Biden's got a lot of things on his agenda right now. You know that. I'm just wondering where this places in the midst of all that.
Well, you know, I think today is the first hearing for the new Secretary of Health and Human Services, Attorney General of California, Javier Becerra, a former congressman, served on the Ways and Means Committee. I think he's going to do everything humanly possible to force some of these changes in terms of the cost of prescription drugs. And we're sending a letter today to the committees that are going to have those confirmation hearings, the Senate Finance Committee and the Senate Help Committee, encouraging them, urging them to confirm Attorney General Becerra. So I think we're going to have, for once in recent memory, a strong advocate to support these kinds of changes that you and I have been talking about.
Times are changing. That's good. That's good. Compared to the last 4 years in office, it's definitely a brighter day. National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare website is ncpssm.org. ncpssm.org. A lot of good information there. I urge you to check it out. Max, thank you so much for joining us. Take care, be safe, and keep in touch, all right?
See you. Thank you very much.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the heat and frost insulators and the Teamsters on pensions. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.